What will be the impact of Brexit on the European Union? What will be the impact on Britain itself? Will Europe come together to form a policy to face the migration crisis? And what effect is the Trump presidency having on Europe? Join us today as Watson Faculty Fellow David Kurtzer puts these questions and more to Romano Prodi, former Prime Minister of Italy, past President of the European Commission, and an adjunct professor of international and public affairs at the Watson Institute.
Well, there's no lack of topics to discuss, speaking with a two-time former Prime Minister of Italy and head of the European Commission. So between Europe and Europe's relations with the United States and Italy and the Italian political situation. But let's start with Europe. You'll be talking later today at the Watson Institute about Brexit and its impact on Europe, including the European Union. I'm wondering, are you concerned that other countries are tempted to follow the example of Britain and seriously consider leaving the EU?
No, I don't. I don't think it, you know, because for several reasons. First of all, UK, in the UK South, there was an alternative. There is an alternative. It's the link with the United States. There is no similar alternative in Poland or other countries, you know. Second, we could also say that these countries depend heavily upon European resources for development. They understand that it's not convenient to split. But there is some deeper reason. You know, when we analyze people in all that, say, Visegrad countries or Poland or they will blame Europe. They will say, look, we don't like it, you know. But when the last question is, do you think opportune for your country to get out of Europe? The absolute majority, the almost the totality, say no. And so there is a complaint, there are complaints, there is blame, so on, but when you go to the yes or no, it's a totally different situation from the British one.
Is the, so of course it's not complete overlap of the Eurozone and the European Union, but there perhaps is greater opposition or political groups that have been criticizing the adoption of the euro. Is this a major threat at the moment to countries actually considering dropping the euro?
No one is considering dropping euro in this moment, you know. Clearly, it was there was this risk during the Greek case when especially on the German side, but in some of the European groups, there was the idea that it was time to put a country out of the currency in order not to create incident. But after this problem was decided, was solved with an alternative choice of let's say, working together in order to avoid the worst consequence of the financial collapse. Everybody is convinced that there will be that a split of the monetary union is not feasible for the, at least for all the time we can conceive.
What impact do you think Brexit will have on Britain itself?
In the beginning, it was almost positive or indifferent. Now it's becoming heavier and heavier every day. You know, it's because nobody thinks that there will be let's say, trade war between UK and Europe, you know. But all the choices in which is preferred to be a member of European Union, they will damage Britain, for example, headquarters, banking branch specialized in euro currency. Even if UK was not inside the euro, they are moving from the city, not in enormous amount, but enough to create some problem in terms of growth.
What impact do you think Brexit's going to have on the rest of the European Union? Does it significantly damage the European Union?
Well, as I told before, UK is a great country. It was one of the biggest European countries, even in terms of population. More than 60 million people, fairly wealthy, industrially important, military. Very important. They are leaving the European Union, and so the consequences are clear in terms. And even more, you know, quite a few countries in the world, quite a few people in the world, they were looking, think at India, think at many African countries, think Australia, New Zealand, they were looking at Europe with some sort of European, of British glasses. And this is a big loss. This is a big loss, you know. But I don't think, as I told before, I don't think that will be repeated, you know,
elsewhere. Well, one of the issues that's created tensions in Europe and the European Union, of course, is migration. And one thing that strikes me is that so much of the migration discussion seems so limited in time scope. We have a, you know, pressing problem. What are we going to do today, tomorrow? But isn't the, and there are certain, you know, hot spots, the Syrian situation, but more generally, if one thinks of migration, for example, from Africa, Africa demographically is expanding rapidly. Poverty there, although there's some bright spots, is still great. Shouldn't there be a longer-term set of policies dealing with migration from Africa in particular in Europe? And is anything being done about a longer-term policy that's going to make sense?
There must be, but to be very objective, I don't see an imminent collective decision on migration. You know, and this is a horrible mistake on long term, because if you think that median age in Italy is now 47, and in sub-Saharan Africa is between 17 and 18, and the population of sub-Saharan Africa will double in a couple of generations. You know, you understand that an intervention is necessary. There is no agreement now, but the German Chancellor, she proposed a Marshall Plan. Then nothing has been done till now, but we must do it because the growth of Africa is necessary to moderate the migration process. Well, you can object that you need a century. But look, migration stops not when a country becomes wealthy, but when there are new hopes of development, you know, as it happened in Italy, you know. Migration stopped not when we had diffuse wealth and let's say, shared high income, but when we started to move. And the ideal in this moment will be an international cooperation for African development, Europe, China, and U.S., but I don't see nothing similar in the horizon.
Well, one of the impacts of migration in Europe has been the rise of both populist and right-wing movements. We have the results of the recent German elections, and there's so many other examples. Do you see these movements as a real threat to Europe right now?
Well, you link migration and populism. Yes, it's true. The first issue that is frightening Europeans is migration in this moment. I don't see the German election so different from normal European election, because as Germany was an exception in Italy, France, Spain, all the traditional political parties, they have decreased in votes, and new parties are in majority now. Germany was the only country with in which you had still a strength of the traditional parties. So I have not been surprised, but the problem concerns all Europe. If we don't tackle together the problem of migration, the anti-European tension will increase, certainly. And of course, you know, we need migrants. The problem is that our demography is terrible. Except France, you have such a negative demography that... you must control them, you must run them, distribute the negative aspect of it among different countries. And this is not politically possible in this moment. Mm.
Speaking of populist movements and new political formations, we have Trump in the United States, and we know he's casting a large shadow beyond our borders, including Europe. I wonder if you could say something about what impact the Trump presidency is having on Europe.
Well, not easy, because the characteristic that is felt in the political European environment is unpredictability. When we discuss in meetings or among analysts, the problem is how can we predict an unpredictable leader, you know? And this makes the consequence that we cannot trust any more United States by definition, as we did in the past, you know. And probably this will have the consequence of speeding up the idea of having a common defense policy, you know. It's when you have not any more absolutely safe American umbrella, you have to build your umbrella. And this could be the moment, because Macron has put this as a priority, not being anymore UK inside Europe. France is the only country having the nuclear armament and the veto right in the Security Council. So you have it's convenient for France to go back to its former situation, which was a real balancing counterpart of Germany. And it's also German interest in this uncertainty to give more attention to the army without being a European, linked with the other European countries. So you will not arise the old problems concerned German strength, German defense, German army. So I do think that there is a window of opportunity for that. So in the end of the story, we could conclude that Trump is maybe that is will help the European unity.
Well, that would be an ironic result. Well, let's turn to Italy. I want to be sure we get to Italy. Italy has national elections, parliamentary elections scheduled sometime in the next few months, haven't been held for almost 5 years now. Yet the situation seems to be extremely unstable. There's been attempts to reform the electoral law. You represent, and you're the Ulivo or Olive Tree movement you founded, represent an attempt to create a more transparent, bipolar political system in Italy. But a lot of people are lamenting moving away from that, increasing fractionalization and lack of governability. I wonder, is this how you see the situation?
In the present situation of political pluralism, let's say you have not anymore the two traditional parties dominating Italy. The old Christian Democratic or Communist don't exist anymore. The situation is similar to France and Spain. But in Italy you have an electoral law that makes much more difficult to shape, to form a new a strong government. Let's say we have a almost proportional law. And so in the present situation with three or four groups equally strong, will not be easy to form a government. You will need alliance. In theory, impossible alliance, because five-star Democratic Party and Berlusconi group are incompatible each other. But I do think that there will be, the day after the election, some alliance. Uncertain now, maybe unexpected after the election. Otherwise, there will be impossibility to have a government like it was for a long time in Spain. But in Italy, this could have deeper consequence because the traditional difficulties of long-lasting governments.
The most recent polls that I've seen show a slight lead from the five-star movement, which is, of course, this new political anti-party, anti-politics movement with not terribly clear program, drawing people from left to right. And the fact that they have to date been unwilling to form alliances with anyone means you have a situation where 30% potentially of the parliamentarians are not up for bidding. And one has to make an alliance among the others, which is, as you mentioned, going to be very difficult. But one of the problems, one of the reasons that the Five Stars is the number one political grouping right now is that the Democratic Party that you've been closely associated with keeps splitting, and people keep trying to form their own little mini parties on the left. Is this some pathology of the left in Italy, or is there a good explanation for it?
First of all, I don't think that five-star movement will be impossibility to make alliance. They say it now to gain votes, but they have no doctrine. They have some left-wing and some right-wing proposals. So I do think that they are very, very free to move. And they are not out of the game in shaping the government.
Can one, for example, imagine the Democratic Party forming an alliance with Cinque Stelle, with Five Stars, and forming a government together?
Well, in racial terms, no, but I do expect everything, you know, in the sense that, I repeat, if Five Stars, they are the first party, there will be asked to make, to shape a so-called, let's say, temporary government or experimental government. And I do think that in that moment they will find alliance with everybody. You know, in this moment, probably more with the right-wing parties, but I cannot exclude anything, you know.
The when we talk about right-wing parties, the largest one perhaps is the Northern League, with new leadership in the last couple of years, and seems to have gotten a new lease on life. Are you concerned about the impact of the Northern League in an election and in Parliament?
Yes, they are strong, equally strong than Berlusconi. The dilemma is, will they go together or not to the elections? If they go together, clearly they are stronger, but the Northern League must give up to a lot of, let's say, tough proposals. And so, let's say, the extremism will diminish. If they stay alone, they are weaker, but they are more extremist. But certainly, they are now a strong player because they are around 50%. And in the Italian situation, 15% is, you know, is a lot.
Yeah. Well, even, I mean, beyond their 15%, it would seem that their anti-immigrant position that seemed to have attracted a lot of support has had an impact on the other parties, not just in the right, but even in the Democratic Party. And for example, there had been attempts to allow citizenship for children born of non-Italians in Italy and have lived all their life in Italy. But that now seems, and which has been backed by the majority of the Democratic Party, but doesn't seem to be able to get through. And even the Democratic Party, Renzi, the party leader, seems to be backing off a strong pro-immigrant kind of position. Do you see this larger influence of the Northern League beyond its own borders?
Certainly, yes. But not because of Northern League, but because of the anti-migration. This has become popular over all Europe. And this has been... you know, the instrument for the populistic party and non-traditional parties to grow.
We have very little time left. Let me, we talked about Trump in Europe, but let's talk just for a final comment on Trump in Italy. How is Trump viewed in Italy, and how has it affected views of America?
America is a little more far away from the country. You know, it's a we have a lot of people, that, not only intellectuals, you know, but also common people, that they not anymore trust, share, by definition, the American decision that it was in the past. And this worries me, and because now, for example, a lot of people consider the American policy vis-à-vis Russia is heavily damaging Italy, and so there is an increased idea that interests between Italy and the U.S. can diverge. That it was not the case before.
Mm. Well, I think we've reached the end of our time, but thanks very much for being with us here at Watson Institute.
No, thank you.
This has been Trending Globally, Politics and Policy. If you enjoyed today's conversation, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Stitcher, or download us on your favorite podcasting app. If you like us, rate us, and help others who might enjoy the show find us. For more information, go to watson.brown.edu.